Start at Colossians 2 and verse 2. All right, Colossians 2:2, that their hearts might be comforted, being knit together in love unto all riches of the full assurance of understanding, to the acknowledgement of the mystery of God and of the Father and of Christ, in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom in knowledge. And this I say, lest any man beguile you with enticing words. For though I be absent in the flesh, yet I am with you in the spirit, joying and beholding your order and the steadfastness of your faith in Christ. As ye therefore receive Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk you in him, rooted and built up in him, established in the faith, as ye have been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving. Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, and after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. Let's just pray. All right, Lord, thank you so much tonight for your word. Thank you for being so good to us. Thank you for the blessings you've given me. And God, I ask you to bless everyone here tonight, that prayers would be answered. You know the needs, and that you bless this time together. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. All right, I want to bring a little bit, you all know I'm a history buff and a history aficionado and stuff, and a little lesson from that, because when nations collapse, and I think they have great problems when they refuse to learn from history. And so, but back in the Battle of Britain in World War II, the English had developed an extensive radar system throughout the country, and they looked like our modern cell phone towers, but they were lattice towers like were behind Marty's, and there was radar all over them. And those of you who understand radar, it's high-frequency radio waves, and this radar would shoot out waves. They would bounce off the planes, and then you could get a vector and a speed and a distance and a relative size of the number of planes that were coming in to attack Britain from Germany. And the English discovered that because these radio waves are bouncing off of what? A big shiny aluminum object, that they could take bundles of little foil strips or chaff and drop that as they were going to attack England or Germany in return. And one of the great errors that the Luftwaffe made, and that's the German Air Force if you guys don't get that, was attacking London and not the radar stations. They had originally attacked the air bases, and they had attacked the radar stations, and the English almost lost the war at that point and the Battle of Britain. But Churchill sent bombers over, and they hit Berlin. And that infuriated Hitler so much that instead of attacking the radar stations, he began the attacks on London itself, and that was what they called the Blitz. But that blunder by Hitler saved the Air Force and of the Royal Air Force and by targeting them instead of their radar stations. The point is that their radar stations in England stayed intact, and they could see the Germans approaching, and they would have adequate time to get their Spitfires and Hurricanes in the air. And the English discovered how to blind and confuse that radar, and they attacked without warning. And that was the whole thing with the chaff. And the deployment of chaff was when they would send their bombers in and send our B-17s and the Lancasters and all the others. They would be dropped from the planes in canisters that would open up. And it was like raining confetti, except it was small strips of aluminum. And those signals got bounced all over, and they hit them, and it blinded the enemy to just where the true attacks were coming from. And in the churches, there's a lot of church chaff, and that's what I want to talk about a little bit tonight, if I can get my cold fingers to function here. They don't do too good after being on manholes half the day. This book right here is our radar station, and it gives us insight. It gives us knowledge. It gives us tactics to use against the enemy, and when he wants to confuse us and get us off our target. And this book, and you all know that, it's been under attack since Westcott and Hort and the Greek New Testament was published. And Christians across this country, they're not quite ready to abandon their Bible, but in a lot of churches they are. They're not bringing in Bibles. They're looking at the big screen. They're watching the bouncing ball. And the guy behind the pulpit, they'll listen to anything he says. So, again, we'll go into some of this types of chaff and how to recognize it, and maybe the stuff that you're not recognizing very easily. And some of them are real easy. Some types of Christian chaff is easy to spot. It's like the foil strips that the B-17s dropped all over France. And you can see them in the churches. They're kind of wispy, shiny things that look pretty in the sunlight. people like that. They're flexible as the wind blows, and they crumble when they hit the ground on impact. And they've got no contact with any when they hit ground or have any contact with sound doctrine. But their purpose is to distract the radar of both the saved and the lost. And you've got people in pulpits all over this country who are pursuing a career instead of a calling. And that's one of the problems. And you see them all over. You look at the priest in their shiny robes and the nuns in their ugly ones. And you look at the televangelist in $1,000 suits. You ever seen a nun with a nice robe that says, wow, I don't get that. You got televangelists with $1,000 suits, $1,000 haircuts. I hate those guys. I haven't had a good haircut in 20 years. You know? I mean, so maybe that's why I despise them even more. Well, yeah, I've got some bias in it. But their purpose is to blind your radar and lead the lost in the way of destruction. They cloud a clear sky. They make the clear cloudy. And that's not the right thing to do. The first one we've got tonight is the Roman Catholic Church. You know, they've been quietly attacking Bible Christianity for thousands of years, for literally hundreds of years now. And we're not ignorant of history. You know, you guys are Bible believers. You get this. You've got, most of you, who's got Fox's Book of Martyrs? Read it. Okay. You've read about, you know, the blood trails. You've read about the persecution of the Baptists, the millions of people that went through the Inquisition and were, you know, died on the rack and the tortures that went on. You're not done with that. But and the thing is, that's us. We get this. But when you look at the world, they see the Pope. They see a guy in a robe with a fish on his head or whatever. They're thinking that's Christian. They're confusing Catholic with Christian. There's a difference in there. And you know, the Pope just joined hands with Jehovah's Witnesses now. Yep, they're busy renovating and air conditioning hell. He just declared. Now, if you heard about that, anybody see that on Drudge Report this week? The Pope declared there's no hell. Now, I'll give you a quote here, and he said that he has joined the Jehovah's... Okay, yeah, there we go, wrong line. But in an interview with his longtime atheist friends, Eugenio Scalfari said that... he said that hell does not exist, the Pope said this, and that condemned souls just disappear. Sounds like soul sleep annihilation. So now the Catholic Church is in a conundrum. He said this, and this is all over, and they're trying to figure out how to backpedal because you've got a problem. The Bible, hell. Church tradition, hell. The church tradition is infallible, right, according with them. And so is the Pope. So now they don't know what to do, and they're walking that all over the place. So they've had quite a time on it. And the Roman Catholic Church has been, we know this, they've been belting out heresy and attacks for a long time. The stuff with the Jesuits, if you understand what they've done, and their universities all over the place. And the attacks are a little bit different now. They're a little bit more subtle. You look at our Supreme Court. 6 of the 9 judges are Roman Catholic. The other 3 are Jewish. Now, you would think with this fine body of religious believers that you could have something that would be favorable towards churches and towards the body politic in the United States, and it's not that case. And the thing is, they're working with the second group, and that's the charismatics. You got charismatic Catholics all over the place now, and they're confusing Baptists and Christians left and right. So you kids, just if you haven't caught some of this stuff, when you're talking about the charismatics, what's the root word? Charisma. It's appeal. It's if you guys used to play back in the role-playing games and stuff like that, you had strength, you had armor, you had hit points, you had charisma. Back when I did the Dungeons and Dragons stuff, that was one of your things. That was your appeal to other people so that they would be at least attracted to you or your ability to lead. That was a part of it. So when you're talking about the charismatics in that line, you're looking at Pentecostals, full gospel anything, all right? That's always going to run to Acts 2:38, the Assemblies of God, almost any New Age, good time rock and roller church that you see out there now. Suncrest, all of these things are derivatives and offshoots of Catholic Church. And with a lot of the charismatics, especially the ones on TV, when you see these guys, remember that their head is a bag of cats, and you can smell crazy on them all over the place, and you listen to what they teach. And the whole thing is, the Baptists are lapping a lot of this stuff up because they're not getting any doctrine taught in their church. And they're following the charismatic prophet statements because they got no real Bible. They've got no discernment on that. And they're blinding Christians. Look at 2 Chronicles 18:22. And this is one of the tactics that they have. All right, now therefore, behold, the Lord hath put a lying spirit in the mouth of these thy prophets, and the Lord hath spoken evil against thee. All right? He put a lying spirit in the mouth of the prophets. That is all over the place today throughout the prophets on that you see on TV. Have you guys heard about the Trump prophet, Mark Taylor, making waves all over the place? He writes the Trump prophecies. He's been all over YouTube. He's been on all kinds of TV stations and stuff like that because supposedly in 2015, he predicted that Trump would be president, and then he's made all these predictions, and a lot of them are kind of hitting because if you make 100 predictions, you're going to get a few hits. That's how the whole thing works with the psychics. But these are what Baptists are following. I've got friends listening to this guy like he actually believes. So here's a quote. Now, he's a likable guy. I mean, he dresses nice. He looks a lot better than I do. And he's polished as a used car salesman with a good personality. And that's a rare thing. You don't see that very much. So he gives you a sense of trust. So here's some of the prophecies. And this is what he said in 2015. Now, just to get a handle on where these people are. The Spirit of God says, the Clintons, your time has come to an end, for you are both being admitted for the crimes you have committed. Hillary's no great secret, and they will be your downfall, but bills will be exposed one after the other, and it will be a windfall. For this time you will not escape the prosecution and restitution for the rape and prostitution. You thought no one saw it, but I, the Lord, see it all, and now this will be your downfall. Now here's your clue. If the prophet of God is speaking like Dr. Seuss, run. Don't walk away, people. I mean, you ever heard speaking just like Dr. Seuss and rhyming and stuff? It's common sense. If you believe that guy, your common sense meter needs a tune-up. And young people, if you guys go out with your friends and visit, and I'll pick on you young guys because you're full of mush up here anyways, and we've got to work on some of that stuff. But there's people that'll fall for that stuff. And the whole thing, the second thing, that's one thing. If he's talking like Dr. Seuss, he's not a prophet, guys. He's not a prophet. All right, the second thing, if you see any of these guys highly praised, these modern day in the Charisma magazine, now that's the leading thing for the charismatics, run away. Don't pay a bit of attention to them. Because when you deal with people that are involved in that, it's just not normal, ordinary, stupid, and it's not a special kind of stupid. You're dealing with weapons-grade stupid there. It is a whole different level. The best thing you can do if you're dealing with these people or you're trying to explain things to them is to give them a plastic bag and let it play with it and let nature run its course. Because they will not ever be able to be persuaded. I mean, not ever. I mean, God's possible with everything, but some of them, it's a fog and a veil, you know. And their job is to damn your kids. They'll mess you up. So one of their leaders. Now, here's the leader that does all the senior editing for this thing. They're pulling in New Age concepts. So you've got the Catholic Church combining with the Charismatic Church, and then they're pulling New Age concepts and New Age channeling and bringing that into the service. So this lady is saying that she releases angels of transition over America. Go follow that one, all right? Now here's the other thing, all right? They're saying that now, if you can see it, you can have it, all right? Now once you see God, this is what she says, but promises eyes of faith, through the eyes of faith. You get that? If you see God through the eyes of faith, if you have faith, translation, if you send your money to me and my organization or whatever, then God will bless you. That's how the whole thing works. You can obtain them and you can pull them down from the spirit realm into reality. You know, I can visualize $1 million in the air. I can visualize myself with a head full of hair and a Mercedes, and I can't pull all that stuff down. But that's what they're teaching. And the whole thing is they're all a part, and they're like circus clowns, but they're all a part of this movement that is a growing movement called the New Apostolic Reformation, or the NAR. And if I remember right, Ted, what was the other guy running against Trump? The Texas guy. Ted Cruz. His dad came out of that stuff. So he was raised with a whole bag of crazy and the whole doctrine on that stuff. But if you're dealing with that, you've got guys like Rick Joyner. Rick Joyner is one of the big wigs in that movement. He's also a Knight of Malta. You ever know what the Knight of Malta is? It's a 16-point star. That's the same thing that the CIA has in their floor. It's the same symbol. Where do you think they got the CIA from, guys? Came out of the church. You got guys like Bam Bam Bentley. He's fun. Look him up on YouTube. It's worth a laugh. Now, he got banged out of it, but he would walk around baptizing people in the name of Bam. He would walk around and go, bam, 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 and people would fall down. And people would do this all over the place. You had guys like Rodney Howard Brown. That was out of the Vineyard movement. And there's Vineyard churches in Valparaiso and things like that. That came out of the Holy Laughter movement. Ken Copeland, Paul and Jan Crouch, do some research on them. Hagen, Joyce Meyer, Joel Osteen, Robert Tilton, Paula White, Rick Warren. What's Rick Warren? He's a Southern Baptist. He's a Southern Baptist. Now, it's easy to recognize the Pope. When he says there is no hell, you're going, okay, you're off the reservation. You can figure that out, all right? You've left the reservation of the Catholic Church. It's easy to see guys on the Pentecostals when they're sitting there trying to cast spirits out of garage doors or whatever, and if you deal with some of these things, get in the streets and have discussions with them, you'll have a barrel of fun. You ever deal with a charismatic woman thinks she has the gift of tongues? So I had the gift of tongues. I said, ma'am, all women do. You're blessed with them. Man, that'll start a fight right there. It will. But, you know, the hard thing is to see is when the rot is coming in from within the church. The Pope is a transformational Marxist. That's what he serves as. It's what the New Age prophets are doing. It's hard to see the rot within. And so the main focus was how the Baptist Church was destroyed in the last 25 years. I want to give you just a little bit on that. The Baptist churches in this country have been destroyed because the Christians are naive and trusting of their pastors instead of this book right here. They trust the guy with the suit. They trust the guy with the tie and the slick talks. And they're unable to discern because they're not getting any truth. They're not able to discern when their pastors or their deacons or their members have turned away from the faith. And we're blessed here. I don't know if you realize what a rarity it's getting to be, and that's a shame that we've got a Jeremiah 3:15 pastor. And you've heard that. I'll give you pastors according to my heart that'll feed you with knowledge and understanding. We've got that. We're blessed with that. We're blessed with solid men in this church. I can look around, and there's a whole lot of guys that are a lot better teachers than I. And I'm glad. I am so glad for these other brothers that can step up, fill in, serve well, and they're good, solid men. That's a blessing. It really is. And then you look at the rest of Jeremiah, where it talks about all the wrong kind of pastors and, you know, how they handle the law wrong. That pastors transgressed against me. You can go all the way down there and look at that. Back in the 1980s, the Southern Baptists rejected this book right here. This is an NIV. I know I shouldn't be bringing this into church. They rejected this because it was too gender inclusive. Too gender inclusive. My old Sunday school teacher back in Schererville used to have a kid's porta potty, you know, them potty trainers, and he kept all the New Age versions of the potty toilet, you know. So that's where we had to go get one. Was take one out of the commode, and he was a trip. That was he was a lot of fun. But this thing began in 1965, and people don't understand how these things were put together. If you open up the beginning of it, now these are harder to find. This was one of the late 80s NIVs, 1984 version or something like that. But you look at the introduction in this thing, and you find out that it was part of what? The Christian Reformed Churches. The Calvinists were putting this thing together. And they partnered up with the National Association of Evangelicals. Well, that sounds nice. Evangelical is nice. And they're pretty and they're friendly. They're 80% charismatic. Now, you think about that. You got the people that have their doctrine totally messed up with the tulip syndrome and the Calvinists, and then the charismatics, they're trying to, well, never mind, well, you know all that stuff, get together with a bunch of other liberal churches, and then they produce a Bible. The only thing is what they won't tell you that the Old Testament manager, chief honcho, Herman Wallenster, was a sodomite. He hung out in the gay bars in New York City all the time. They won't tell you that. They'll tell you that the New Testament, one of their literary consultants was Janet Rostra. She was an out-of-the-closet lesbian. So you get a production of this thing that takes out the sodomites out of the Bible, and if you look at the occult and you look at how they teach about music and things like that, back with, this is taking me back, Fleetwood Mac, some of these days, when they would take the records, they would literally have a seance over the record, the master recording, over the label. And what they would do is sit inside a pentagram and invoke a demonic spirit to bless the master recording. And the idea is that spirit will go out with all the copies. And then when you bring that into your house, you're bringing not only the music, you are bringing a spirit attached to that into your head. Same thing goes with this book. You got a effeminate Bible, and it produces an effeminate pastor, and it produces effeminate Christians who've got lace on their underwear, and they don't know what they believe anymore. And that's the problem. So this is in 1980. The Baptist said this was, okay, the Southern Baptist said this was too What I'm going to say. Totally lost my train of thought. That happens easy. Yeah. Too inclusive as far as gender bias, stuff like that. So in fall 2016, the Southern Baptist Convention, there's 15 million members, produced the Christian Standard Bible. And that's a nice Bible for Southern Baptist. And the patrons don't understand that they've taken a Bible that's completely gender inclusive now. So they took, they translate the word anthropos, the Greek word for man, a gender neutral form 151 times. So it's not longer son of man, it's son of human, or people, or ones, men of Israel as fellow Israelites, and the word brother is brother or sister. So they're effeminizing and gender neutralizing everything, and they're making God a he or she, and then they've got, what is it, they've published the Rainbow Bible, literally, and that's the Queen James Bible. They did that. That was on Amazon. That came out for sale on Amazon last year. So the Baptists now have completely, the Southern Baptists have gone off the reservation, and they're producing gender-neutral and friendly Bibles. And it's sad to say that anybody that puts on a suit and tie or claims to be a prophet or a pastor, and people will follow them. And this mess has led to the ignorance of the techniques. And you say, well, how did they get through all this? Not all these people are dumb. Not all these people have abandoned their foundations and their teachings, but how did they do it? And the Baptist Church was corrupted by the teachings of a guy named George Hegel. Now, he's a socialist Marxist, but the thing is, it came through the teachings of back in the 95 through 2004, through that purpose-driven life, purpose-driven search. You guys go into Christian bookstore, how many of you have seen that? If you came into other Baptist church, you saw what? Purpose-driven life, purpose-driven church, 40 days of purpose, all this stuff. All right? And that style is a Hegelian dialectic, and you'll see this thing used in the Bible. Those in management might have heard a term, total quality management, and that's based on this Hegelian dialectic. But Hegel was a transformational social psychologist and a Marxist. The Hegelian dialectic looks like this. So we take this side, okay, we have believers in a church. So you have believers on one side, all right, that's your thesis, and we'll just put the unbelievers over here. You have your antithesis. All right, then along comes a guy like me or a Sunday school teacher, all right, and then he's what they call the change agent or the facilitator or the junior pastor that wants to overthrow a senior pastor, and his goal is to bring big clusters of saved, big clusters of lost, dialogue the Word of God, and produce a synthesis. That's how the Hegelian dialectic works. So you have thesis, antithesis, synthesis with a trained coordinator or agent. Now, the whole thing is you got to understand the occult behind this. There's all these teachings in the Baptist church are straight out of the occult. Hegel was into alchemy, the Kabbalah, theosophy with Madame Blavatsky, if any of you are familiar with that stuff, Gnosticism, mesmerism, psychic phenomena, dowsing, precognition, sorcery. He hung around with occultists. He believed in earth spirits and colleagues in the nature of magic, and he aligned himself with the Hermetic societies like the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians and embraced all of the hidden symbols and triangles and handshakes and all that stuff that goes with it, and it's been adopted by the Baptist churches. They just don't know it. Let's look at number 16. You'll see this principle, how it was illustrated in the Bible. Number 16, verse 1, and we'll go to 1 to 3. Okay, number 16:1. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, and the sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes, 250 princes of the congregation, of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and they said unto them, "You take too much upon you, seeing you, all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore, lift ye up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord." So here you've got the Hegelian dialectic in play. You have the believers represented by Moses and Aaron, okay? That is your thesis. You've got the unbelievers, or the antithesis, with Korah, Dathan, Abiram, and On. Then you look at 16, verse 2. There was a lot that went on between Numbers 16, verse 1 and verse 2. They took men. There was a whole lot of back tent discussions. There was a whole lot of back channels discussions and planning and plotting of a theme. And that theme was what? Moses is too powerful. You're taking on too much for you. You should share prophets. Then you get the what? The princes of the assembly. Those are your change agents. That's what the Marxists call useful idiots right now. And then a useful idiot is those that's been duped into a following a lie that they believe is true. So you've got those 250 men are basically following the four in the original. Then you look at number 16:3. Then what did they do? They took Moses, the thesis, the antithesis, the unbelievers. You take too much among you, seeing all the congregation are holy. That's like Anderson Cooper telling you CNN is an honest bunch of group. There they were. And so in that verse, you have thesis, antithesis. What was the predetermined goal that Korah wanted? He wanted power. He had a predetermined outcome, a predetermined goal of a synthesis. Let's get Moses to yield and to blend with us. We'll move the football, so to speak, a little bit that. And then you had the 250 men acting as the change agents, following a leader to overthrow what would be the pastor, the leader of the congregation. But the whole purpose is there's always a predetermined outcome. So when you dialogue with somebody, instead of in a discussion, all right, it's just like a kind of like a discussion, but what you're doing is you're trying to solve a problem or debate an issue. In discussion, facts and reason are part of the discussion. In dialogue, they're supposed to be set aside. There's a difference in there. And the Hegelian dialectic always has that predetermined outlook. So now look at it now. Go to the churches here in Lowell. What do you see? You have traditional service, the early one for the older folks, and then what do you have after that? Contemporary service for the rock brains, or the mush brains. You've got the traditional music early, right? And then what do you have after that? Rock on. Bring out the electric guitars and the drums. Let's go. Don't even get started on the whole drums. You look and follow what Native American Indians, it's a woman's spirit resides within the drum. Study that stuff out a little bit. Open your eyes up. So what happened to the Baptist churches? They got dialogued to death. They got talked to death. And they were changed without knowing how they process information. It's kind of like a spiritual Xanax. And one of the first things to change the church is to get everybody in small groups. That's how they do it. Get everybody in a small group. Let's have the divorce group, the young people's group, the singles group. Get all these different groups. But at the head, there's always a leader of every group. All right, that's your change agent. That's how they did that stuff. And that was what you call small group dynamics. That's how they did it. Then you get most of your members broken into these 60 styles and counter groups without all the pot or the acid, and they have snacks and coffee and friendship, and it all sounds real good. And then they have rules in the group. These are how the churches were broken up. The first thing in these groups is they'll use open-ended discussion and books that you have to follow, the 40 Days of Purpose. There's questions in the back. And they're subjective and open-ended instead of so that what they want. They want feeling-based opinions and not scriptural-based truths. That's how the whole stuff thing works. The questions are, how do you feel? What do you think? All right? Not what do you believe, what does the Bible say? And then they've got rules in the group. So you've got a leader of the group, and the first rule is you don't offend anybody by taking a stand on truth or facts. And none of the Bible says that. They'll kind of, well, no, that's not the idea. Remember, we've got unbelievers, and we're trying to minister to them, so we don't want to appear threatening or dogmatic, okay? And they don't want you to use words like, I know or I believe. I think, I feel. And they want to show your willingness. And what is that? To compromise or bend or fit in to what? A group consensus. And the whole thing is, if you hear people using I think or I feel and they're trying to get you to work that way in a group, what they're doing is twisting truth and applying it to an unsuspecting party. And then they'll tell you that you have to show respect and appreciation for all positions, even those that clash with the Bible and people that are adamantly against it in the church. Even if you think they're idiots, you have to be nice to them. I can't do that. I'm not that nice. If you're an idiot, generally speaking, I'm going to try to maybe point you in the direction of, you know, let's look a different direction. I have a hard time with it. But you have to have spiritual diversity in the church for the dialectic process. You have to have that big group. Not I'm saying don't evangelize the lost. That's not the idea. But this is how the churches got split up. And the whole thing is there's no answers to a question in these small groups. There's no correct answers. But the idea is to conform your individual thoughts or thinking into a group for unity. So, and what they do, it's like an encounter group. You get your ideas and your emotions and your feelings are all put on the big dialogue table and sifted together and blended into one big old cow pile of untruth. and they expect you to take a bite and compromise. It's like putting sugars and sprinkles and frosting on a cow pie, you know, and it smells better and it tastes sweeter, but it's still a turd. And that's what they're expecting you to take a bite out of. And the whole thing is, this is just like Soviet brainwashing. If you want to see what they did to people and how they acted in Gestalt therapy that the Germans did, it is popular with the encounter groups of the 60s. And a person's got to learn to be authentic and feel and vulnerable. And you put yourself out there, all right? So you get your personal feelings out there and you confess your weaknesses. Isn't that what they do in some secret societies? Tell all your secrets, tell the confessional. Then guess what? They own you. They own you, all right? Okay, so you're taught to approve and celebrate all-inclusive viewpoints of God's promises and help people feel at home no matter what your beliefs or lifestyles or values are, just like the confessional. And to encourage that, you've got to have that group leader. Remember, he's controlling things. And if you're in that type of a church, they're recording things and typing things down and using that in people management software, just like Facebook analyzes your strengths, your weaknesses, your political aspirations, and everything. And the whole thing is they want to encourage a safe environment. You wonder why the church is so full of snowflakes, young and old? It's because they're being taught in the churches. I mean, we joke about these millennials and the snowflakes and how wimpy those guys are, but they're being taught in the churches, they're being taught at home, they're being taught to be a snowflake by the news media, the schools, and the college, and they don't know what to believe because they have no absolutes. That's how the thing went. But the goal in this thing is always movement. It's always movement on that, and it's imperative that you get all these unbelievers brought into the church. And that's another thing with the antithesis, the thesis. You can't get continual change in a church unless you go through a rapid growth process and bring in lots of other people that aren't Christians, that really don't want to be Christians, but they want to be a part of a group. And they want to be part of the group dynamic. A church like this that stands on the book, that stands on truth, can't be moved. We're not going to buy into it. We're absolutely not going to buy into it. But you can't tell the 15 million members of the SBC that have bought into it already have. They had their churches stolen from them and didn't even realize it, that they were following a Marxist doctrine. And the whole thing is, when the Word of God is dialogued, and as opposed to being taught didactically between believers and unbelievers, and you get a consensus reached, what do you have? You have a watering down of the truth. All right, you have an agreement, you have a consensus, and now we've moved our football a little bit to the left. We're a little bit left to center now, and this point becomes the foundation for the new basis, the foundation to move the next dialogue and synthesis, so it can be going from a King James to being a little bit more inclusive. Then the next step is, well, we need to be a little bit more with the music. Then the next step is we need to be a little bit more tolerant of the queers. And then the next step, and then what do you got? You got Babylon. But it's incrementalism. You know, the camel under the tent type of a thing. But that's how it's done. And the whole point is the reliance on the weakening of truth. And what they're trying to do is change the very way people think and process information. And they use that with group dynamics and pressure. And how is that? Because people want to be a part of something. Want to feel like they're a part of something. People intrinsically want to be loved. They don't all want to be social outcasts. But the fear of alienation of the group is that's what prevents people from speaking up and speaking the word of truth. What they're relying is on the pressure of the group and this thing and everybody to kind of put a little bit of heat on so that you're self-editing, so that your voice is quiet. Then you get a paradigm shift on how you process information because you begin to doubt that there is absolute truth because there's all these people that have developed a consensus of their feelings and you've agreed to it. And they compromise on absolutely everything. It is literally a way that things are how you're processing information and thinking. And that's what's happened. The discernment is gone. They didn't have the right book, they didn't have the right pastor, and they've really bought into a lie. And it's sad to see what's happening to the churches. So what happens if this is in your group and you don't like this in your church and they're moving into this and you've wound up in the bald men's group? Okay, I'm in there. All right? So you're in that. So the first thing they want to do with this is identify resistors. They teach you how to spot a resistor of a growth movement, all right? So they're looked at, and Rick Warren said that resistors are a disease. They're just like a cancer that must be cut out for growth to continue, all right, in this movement. And anybody that questions the change is automatically identified as a resistor. So the second step, if you don't abide with it, is you're ascertained. You're literally sized up, so to speak, for the fist fight. They're evaluating your strengths, your weaknesses, your biblical knowledge, anything you've got on Facebook. They're going through with software analytics and pre-programming and looking what makes you tick and how to get you to conform to this. But resistors, they tell you in the book, resistors must be judged for relative sophistication and influence. And then, if you have a person that's stepping out of the group and the group think a little bit, you try to befriend them. You appeal to the group dynamic and peer pressure. You know, this is such a good thing, and we've been together for 6 months, and we've got all this coffee and donuts together, and we've gained 10 pounds, and, you know, this is the only church bald men group around. What are you going to do when you leave? I guess I'll just be bald by myself. I don't know. But they put that kind of pressure to get that. Befriend you. Try to reel you back in and get you to conform. And then if not, then you begin to marginalize. When you marginalize somebody, it's to start shoving them out a little bit. You're saying that they obstruct progress, and they undermine what? Unity. You're undermining the passion for change. You're undermining the growth and the spirit that we need in this church to continue. That's how it works. And then they get the pastor to say, well, you know, I just think, brother, that you're probably going to be happier somewhere else. And, you know, out of obedience to the Lord, you don't need to tell anybody what you believe and why you're leaving. And then the church is instructed not to ask them or have anything to do with them. Just like when the Jehovah's Witnesses have a person that leaves the faith, they are shunned. You know how that happens. They do that. So they begin to marginalize them, and the pastors encourage them to leave. And then if you decide to stay and fight, this is my church. I have been here. I'm here for 20 years. I helped build this place. I am a part of it. I'm going to fight you guys to the bitter end. So that's when the negative labels come in. Accusations, slander. You get attacked on Facebook. They take you off the like page. Man, if you guys are still on that stuff after the scraping and all the data mining they're doing on that, you need to reconsider where you're spending some time, folks. But they vilify you for staying and fighting, and you're blamed for that awful word, disunity. You have committed the crime of disunity on that, and you have got to go. Now, how do they get that? Well, I'm not going. Well, the first thing they do when you're in one of these movements, they have you. They have bylaws and regulations, and they give you to sign this little innocent thing that says this. And at Saddleback Church, that's his church, that's a big one, every member signs a membership covenant. I mean, they were doing that stuff, but I mean, I could think of tons of Baptist churches, and they're like, man, they wanted me to sign this covenant that said I would do all these things and this promise, and I would do all this. And I said, yeah, that's a Rick Warren covenant they're wanting you to sign there. But the thing is, it says, I will protect the unity of my church by following the leaders. And then the covenant is backed by, you know, Hebrews 13:17, obey your leaders and submit to their authority type of stuff. That's how they work it. So then, if you have signed on that paper, and you are being a stick in the mud, and you are being obstinate, and you are not going along, you have agreed in this covenant to abide by that agreement, you have to go. You are expelled. And when you have a church that's split 50%, let's say believers, and 50% non-believers, they'll just get a few more into this side of the group dynamic, and these paper is lost as a goose in a horse race, and then they'll vote out the leaders. They'll literally vote them out of the church, and they'll vote out the pastor and bring in the dynamic. And that's how the Baptist churches have been lost in this country, in there. And the reason I'm telling you that is I don't want to see it happen here. That's the reason you don't have a whole lot of younger men deacons, because they haven't quite figured out what life really is all about. They've got a lot of learning to do. Get married, have a few kids, have a lot of problems, learn some things, and then you got a little learning under in school and under your belt. So that's how to recognize church chaff a little bit tonight. That's how the Baptist churches in this country were destroyed. And I don't want to see it happen here. But at least when you see that and other people are telling you, you say, hey, you know what? Here's what happened to you. You can tell them. All right. So let's any prayer requests tonight? Any prayer requests tonight?